there's an assumption most of us carry without ever really examining it. That the thoughts moving through your mind are yours. That the voice narrating, reacting, worrying, that voice is who you are. I want to push on that today, because I'm not sure it's entirely true. And I think the question itself, if we're willing to sit with it, changes something. For a long time, I believed my thoughts were me, that I was generating them, that I was responsible for having them, and that whatever passed through my mind said something real and definitive about who I was as a person. When you believe that, thoughts don't just pass through. They become identity. Some carry shame. You should know better. This isn't who you are. Others carry something heavier. I can't believe I thought that. What kind of person does that make me? Even something brief, a flash of irritation, a dark or unexpected thought, can suddenly feel like a moral failure. I think about a new mother, exhausted, overwhelmed, having a passing negative thought about her child. If she believes that thought is her, the weight of that moment can be genuinely unbearable. It doesn't matter that the thought lasted 2 seconds. It can feel like a verdict. And then there are the other kind of thoughts, the ones that quietly place us just slightly above others, more informed, more aware, more right. Those can become identity too, just more comfortably. What I've slowly come to understand is that thoughts are not me or you. They move through us. And while we may not choose what arrives, we do have some say in what happens next. Because thoughts gain their power through attention. The more we follow them, the more they seem to take hold. Which raises a question that turns out to be stranger than it first appears. If thoughts aren't ours, what exactly are they? Episode 1, Thought Forms. Across cultures, across philosophical traditions, and now in some emerging scientific frameworks, there's a recurring suggestion that thoughts may behave less like possessions and more like patterns that arise within us. Federico Fagin, a physicist and one of the inventors of the microprocessor, writes about this in his book, Irreducible. What he suggests is that thoughts are not self-conscious, they don't know that they exist, they don't carry identity, and they have no awareness of themselves. They're more like formations, patterns that appear, shift, and dissolve, depending on conditions, like weather moving through a landscape. From that perspective, what we are is not the thought itself. We are the awareness in which it appears. The part of us that notices, that reflects, that chooses how to respond. Elizabeth Gilbert gets at something similar, though she comes at it from a completely different direction. In Big Magic, she talks about the ancient Greek concept of eudaimonia, being vel daemund, accompanied by a creative force. In that worldview, ideas aren't owned, they visit. The role of the individual isn't to control them, but to collaborate with them. She describes inspiration as something that arrives with a kind of invitation. And if you're not available to meet it, it moves on. She even points to the phenomenon where multiple people arrive at the same insight at the same time, as if something in the wider field had simply ripened. The mathematician Janosch Bolyai described it like this. When the time is right for certain things, they appear in different places, like violets coming up in early spring. It's a strange and genuinely open question. Are any thoughts truly conceived within us? Or are they all arrivals, appearing when conditions are right? Some pass through easily. Others stay, returning again and again, even when we'd prefer they didn't. Thoughts arrive across a wide spectrum. At one end, the entirely mundane. I'm hungry. It's cold. I need to respond to that email. They help us navigate the body, the environment, the moment. But even simple thoughts can unfold. I'm hungry becomes, what should I eat? Which gets shaped by habit, by time, by what you've learned to prefer. A simple signal becomes a sequence, and from there, a direction. Not every thought needs examining, but some do. The ones that shape how you see yourself, how you see other people, how you move through the world, those ask for a different kind of attention. And when you bring that attention, sitting quietly, watching, something becomes clear. Not all thoughts feel the same. Some arrive with urgency, almost demanding to be followed. Others carry fear, tightening everything around them. And then there are thoughts that feel clear and steady, as if they've already settled into place. And occasionally, something appears that feels different altogether. A kind of quiet intelligence, almost foreign and yet strangely familiar. I've started to think of certain thoughts almost like characters, separate from me but recognizable, as if they've been there all along, just waiting for the right conditions to show up. One of them is animated, almost playful, bright and insistent. I picture it as a small, cheerful figure, persuasive, waving me forward like, now is the time, you've earned this. It doesn't feel malicious, it just feels very convincing. Another is much harder to notice. It stays at the edges, like something gathered quietly in a corner, only visible when I deliberately bring attention to it. Dense, repetitive. A place where anxious thoughts seem to collect and cycle. It doesn't announce itself, but once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. And then there's a third. More subtle than the others. Less a character, more a feeling. Light, expansive, open. It doesn't push, it doesn't insist. It just invites. And when I follow it, my mind gets quieter, more receptive. And from that place, something else begins to emerge. Clarity. A kind of intuitive understanding that doesn't argue for attention, but quietly reshapes the way I see things. Seeing thoughts this way, the inner landscape becomes less chaotic and more legible. Not something to suppress or control, but something to notice. And when something can be seen clearly, there's a little more space around it, a little less urgency to follow it, a little less pull to become it, at least in theory. I want to be honest about something, because this can all sound a lot cleaner than it actually is. Some thoughts don't simply pass. They repeat, they intensify, they gather weight. What starts as a passing pattern can become something you feel genuinely caught inside. A cycle of fear, of doubt, of self-criticism that doesn't respond to logic or intention. And in those moments, it doesn't feel like you're observing a thought. It feels like you are the thought, pulled into it, moved along with it. I've felt this. When a thought doesn't fade, it circles. It returns. And before long, it's not something I'm noticing from a distance. It's something shaping the entire moment from the inside. I felt how heavy that can become, how it can pull everything in one direction, toward fear, toward sadness, sometimes toward anger that starts to reach outward. And I've seen it in other people too, how easy it is to get caught inside a pattern like that, and how genuinely difficult it can be to find your way back out. There's another version of this I want to address, one that happens earlier in life, and often without any of the language or perspective that might help make sense of it. When we're young, in school, moving through hallways and cafeterias and classrooms every day, the thoughts that land hardest are often the ones delivered directly by another person. A comment made in passing, a name called across a room, a message read and reread late at night, words that arrive with someone's face attached to them, and that somehow move in and start to cycle, making you question your own sense of self. And unlike an adult who has more agency to change their environment, a child navigating cruelty from peers often has no escape from it. The same faces return every morning, the same hallways, the same weight carried within. No escape from any of it. And over time, a thought that began outside of you can quietly become the story you tell yourself about who you are. This is where anxiety takes root, in the body's constant anticipation of the next moment of harm. And this is where depression can begin to settle in, not as a feeling exactly, but as a kind of slow dimming, a withdrawal from the world that once felt safe, and sometimes an anger to inflict the same pain onto others. I want to say this clearly. Those responses make sense. They are not weakness. They are what happens when a nervous system, at any age, is doing its best to protect itself from something it doesn't yet have the tools to process. What's strange, when you step back, is that no one has ever fully designed for this. There have always been attempts, religion offering moral frameworks, families passing down values, literature and film quietly modeling what it looks like to be good. The occasional teacher, counselor, or coach who saw something in you and said the right thing at the right moment. Those attempts matter. Some of them have shaped lives profoundly. But as a collective infrastructure, as something available to everyone, built into the fabric of how we raise and educate human beings, it has never quite cohered. No institution ever took full responsibility for what gets planted inside a developing mind, for the thoughts people inherit, the patterns they absorb, the interior landscape they'll carry. We've put enormous care into shaping what people know, almost none into shaping how they inhabit themselves. And now, of all things, it's the people building artificial intelligence who are asking those questions most deliberately. How do we shape a mind well? What qualities do we want it to carry? What kind of character are we responsible for? It's a genuinely strange mirror to hold up, because collectively, for humans, we still haven't answered it. And right now, for many of us, it feels like the gap is showing. But here is what I want to offer, gently and without pretending it's simple. Those thoughts, however loud, however persistent, however thoroughly they seem to have moved in and made themselves at home, they are not you. They never were. They arrive from outside. They were shaped by someone else's pain, someone else's pattern, someone else's unprocessed interior. And they found conditions in which to take hold. But beneath all of it, beneath the cycling, the dimming, the anticipation, there is something that none of those thoughts can touch. Not because it's hidden or broken or waiting to be fixed, but because it was never part of the exchange to begin with. It is the part that notices, the awareness behind the thought, something prior to the story, prior to the name called across the room, prior to the message read one more time in the dark. That part is harder to name than a thought. It doesn't argue for attention. It doesn't cycle or insist. It simply is. And it is, always, more fundamental than anything that has ever passed through it. This is part of why this topic matters to me. It's not abstract. It shapes how we feel, how we relate, how we treat people, including ourselves. Even within those cycles, something remains, a small distance, a flicker of awareness, sometimes faint, sometimes hard to access, but present. And sometimes that's enough, not to stop the thought, not to force it away, but to notice that it's happening. And in noticing, something begins to shift. Not dramatically, not all at once, but just enough to create a little separation between the thought and what happens next. And in that separation, however slight, there's just enough distance to ask something you couldn't ask from inside it. Not just, what am I thinking, but what is this thought doing? Is it moving something forward or holding something in place? Is it opening me or narrowing me? Without needing to force anything away, a quieter kind of discernment begins to emerge. Which thoughts do I continue? Which ones do I build on? And which ones might I gently, gradually, begin to let go of? There's a word for the part of us doing that discerning. Vajin calls it satiety, the part that holds identity and agency. Thoughts arise and pass, but something remains, observing, reflecting, participating. We may be more than the stream of passing thoughts. There may be a part of us that is doing the noticing, and that part has more agency than we often give it credit for. There's a commencement speech David Foster Wallace gave in 2005 that I return to every year. It was published as a small book called This Is Water, one I've held on to and come back to more times than I can count. In it, he talked about the most obvious and important realities being the hardest to see. The ones so constant, so close, that we move through them without ever quite noticing we're inside them. He called it learning how to think. Not what to think, how. And the fact that he said it to graduates, people walking out of years of formal education, armed with knowledge, credentials, and almost no instruction on what to do with their own minds, has always stayed with me. What I've come to believe is that the work goes one layer deeper still. Because before we can choose how to think, something has to be doing the choosing. And that something, the part that notices, that observes, that can pause even briefly before the next thought takes hold, that's what this whole episode has been circling around. Wallace was pointing at the water. What I'm interested in is the fish that finally turns and asks the question. That moment of recognition. That small, quiet turning toward awareness. That's where it begins. If thoughts are visitors, then awareness is the home, and how we receive them shapes what we build from them. The space between what arrives and what we do with it, that space is always there, even when it doesn't feel like it. I'm Lindsay. Thanks for spending some time in the space between. I'll see you in the next one. If this series has opened something for you, please consider sharing it. Independent work like this relies on listeners to sustain it. And if you'd like to support it directly, you can find a link in the show notes. Additional information about this series can be found at spacebetween.fm.